You're listening to the Focus on Women podcast, where our mission is to elevate female-identifying creatives in the commercial photography industry.
We talk with all types of creatives, from producers, art directors, creative directors, to photographers, agents, and stylists. We dig into how they got to where they are today.
I'm Shelley Waldman, a commercial and editorial photographer focusing on food and lifestyle, living between London and California.
And I'm Lauren Hubbard, a commercial and editorial food lifestyle photographer based in Atlanta, Georgia.
And we're going to dig into this next episode.
Let's do it. Hi, Shelley. Happy Friday.
Hey, Lauren. Happy Friday to you. What's happening in Atlanta?
It's a little overcast, but overall, it's starting to warm up. I'm super excited about that. But I'm heading out to see my son in Puerto Rico tomorrow. So I'm escaping this cloudy weather. How is it over there in London, the land of cloudy days?
I went from gorgeous 75 degree like sunny weather in LA to cloudy and 40 degree weather here in London.
Oh,
you know,
man.
It was like coming home.
There you go.
I knew I was coming home. It's been a busy 2-3 days since I've been home though. So I went to an Adobe event. I went to see Dave Matthews Band last night at the Royal Albert Hall, which was amazing.
You've been doing exciting things. I want to know, before we get into our episode, I want to one good takeaway from the Adobe event, like one nugget.
Oh, one nugget. I found it really fascinating. It's the first time Adobe has hosted a photographer only get together.
Ooh.
In the UK, in London. So that was the first time ever that they've done that. And they did some recapping from Adobe Max, where they talked about some of the beta stuff that's out for Photoshop right now that people can download already. And then they talked about some stuff, showed some stuff coming to Lightroom. It hasn't rolled out yet, but it's really exciting. And there's, I think most photographers would know the bane of the existence of the clone stamp tool in Lightroom is pretty not wonderful.
It's not
and,
great.
And they've made some drastic changes to it. So a lot of the things that we would open Photoshop for like little quick fixes, we will now be able to just do that right in Lightroom and not have to go to Photoshop.
Ooh, that's exciting. That's a good nugget. Ooh. Well, I'm happy you got to go to that. That sounds phenomenal. Well, today we have one of our like regular Focus on Women friends with us.
I know, it's exciting.
I know, I'm so excited. Nitya, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my goodness. Okay, we need your like, what's your waiting in line for? I know this from like stalking your work. I know you're a fan of chai. If someone asks you what you do, what's your sort of elevator pitch kind of quick overview? Who is Nitya? What do you do?
Nitya is someone who loves food and drink, makes a great cup of chai, and the best way she shows her love of food and community is through photography. So Nitya is a commercial and editorial food and beverage photographer.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I will say, just from seeing your work, that your like love of like food and the community around it really comes through. It has such warmth and life to it. Really, really beautiful. So that like 100% sounds like such a great way to encapsulate who you are and what you do. That's awesome.
So let's go back. Let's go back to early days, your younger self. You know, we're talking like your 5 to 10-year-old years. Were you always a foodie? Were you always helping in the kitchen and getting under mom's feet and that kind of thing? Or was this kind of a later in life discovery?
I was always a foodie. I am a foodie. I think I just love food and spice. And growing up, born and brought up in India, it's like the obvious sort of way to express ourselves. Everything is around food, where happy, sad, frustration, it all kind of has a way of making its way into our lives through food. So I've always been a foodie. I didn't know I could be a photographer. I grew up knowing that I could either be a doctor or an engineer, because those are the only things an Indian girl can do, or get married at 21. So didn't do either of those. Ran away from home, joined architecture college.
Wow.
And to Bombay, and did that for 5 years. and was doing that for a long time, started my own business as an interior designer, was actually designing restaurants for 5 years before I met my husband in a bar, as most respectable Indian women do, and then got married, moved cities, moved countries, moved to Seattle. We had our son, and then I was home staging. We moved to Chicago. I went to Art Institute, came to Austin, decided I can't do this anymore. I really need to do what I love to do. And so I picked up a camera, and here I am.
Wow, whoa. What a journey. That was a lot of travel in there.
Yes. I know. Oh, my goodness.
All right. So we got to back up the bus a little bit. So I'm super fascinated, one, that you were doing interior design architecture for restaurants, right? Like, your love of food kind of bubbled up through that world too, into the restaurant world. And I'm curious how that time capsule period, right? You mentioned, I think it was about 5 years doing that before you came over to the US. Did you find that past experience, now looking back, now being a food photographer, has influenced how you see restaurants today through your lens?
Absolutely. I think the way food interacts with light, people interact with the space, kind of it all comes together as an experience. And so my time designing restaurants and thinking about those details, you know, those ergonomic details as to how people would seat around a table. Is the lighting right? What color is the food? How is it lit? I think those things just naturally translated into photography without me even thinking it. And, you know, having an architecture background, like, it's always that, you know, that game of how light falls on something and how long the shadows are. And I didn't go do a formal photography course. So I think, you know, when I hear these things, I was like, oh, okay, it makes sense. But it was never like a formal effort to learn photography. It kind of just happened.
So when you went back to school, you mentioned going to school in Chicago, that you went to Art Academy. What was that for?
I went to study UX design and graphic design.
Okay.
Calculated. And then when we moved to Austin, I was briefly a creative director for a residential real estate company. And then I realized I can't be at a desk. It's just like, it kills me to like wake up in the morning and go to an 8-to-5 job. It's just not me. I don't like people telling me what to do. That's a big part of not having a regular job. And so here I am.
I love that entrepreneurship is just like the perfect answer for people who are like, I don't want someone to tell me what to do. You should just be an entrepreneur.
And people still get to tell you what to do because they tell you what they want.
True.
That's true. That's true.
Right. But you won't be sitting at an office necessarily when they do it. So.
No.
Oh my goodness. So I've heard you say a couple of times you didn't have any formal photo courses. It just happened. It never just happens though. Like, how did you, like, what made you pick up a camera, and what was the intention going into that?
I think I was trying to decide what to do because I knew I didn't want to do the full-time job as a creative director. It was not really making me happy, even though the money was good. So, you know, I started making recipes, you know, and sort of modifying it to the sort of ingredients that were available here. And then I started writing a blog called Beyond Curry. And I was sort of documenting these recipes in that blog. And I have a really good friend here called Leandra. She's a portrait and fashion photographer. And she said, why don't you pick up a camera? I said, I don't know what to do with it. She's like, just do this and like look through it. I was like, yeah, but everything looks so weird through a camera. Like, it doesn't look as big. And so she's like, just try it. You can do it. So she was actually doing a food photography workshop at a restaurant. So she said, come, you should like, and it was all natural light. There was no artificial light. She said, we'll walk around town and you can take pictures of what you like. I said, okay, that sounds doable. So that was like 2017. And I did that one day course and I just fell in love with it.
So you found a friend/mentor in her.
Yes, she's been my cheerleader from day one. So she's absolutely awesome.
So let's talk about the reps that go into this, right? Like, if you were going to go to the gym and get fit, you know, there becomes a routine and a hobby. And I think that plays into what we do as photographers. And I'd love to know, like, from that initial spark of this like photo walk that you went on, what became kind of, whether it was a routine, like habitual, or just something, it could have been more like playful and less structured, but where did that take you, right? Like, how did you keep developing your photography skills?
I think first of all, the disclaimer I wanted to have here is that once I started using my camera, I stopped pulling out my phone to take pictures of the food we were eating in restaurants, because it didn't look the same to me. So I think I was very mindful of when I interacted with food from behind a lens. And I really started paying attention to the color, the details. And it's just something that really interested me. And because I was writing the blog at that time and I was cooking all the time, it was a good sort of tool for me to practice doing my own work. And once I felt confident that this was looking to be something that I enjoy doing, I, you know, started putting myself out there. Like most of us, I did a few free jobs for restaurants, for people who were small businesses and, you know, had a product they wanted to launch. You know, I was happy to be part of the journey, but then I realized food photography is a business. And then I was like, oh, I can charge money for it. So let's do this.
So it started as, you know, this friend encourages you to pick up a camera because like the goal at the moment was to be able to photograph the things that you were creating, the recipes you were creating for your blog, right?
Yes.
And then at some point it morphs into, oh, I'm just enjoying photographing this food. Let's actually just dive into more of this, but with other people's food.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And how, like, talk to me a little more about the blog. Are you like the Beyond Curry? How mm-hmm. long did you do that? Is that still something you're doing, or is it now more of a focus on sort of, you know, marketing and blogging and efforts for your business?
I think I stopped doing that right around COVID because I started doing more of, I mean, I didn't stop cooking, but I started focusing more on the business aspect of photography, like how to like build a portfolio and, you know, read as and, you know, follow so many inspiring photographers, what they are doing and collaborating and listening to podcasts or, you know, listening into all these talks. So I think it was pretty time intensive. And so my blog kind of turned into just me cooking and eating the food that we made, but it never really made it to a site after that. So that was the sort of transition that happened from blogging to photography.
So let's dive into the business side of everything, right? You know, the spark to pick up a camera is one thing, but it's also, there's a whole journey in just figuring out how to be the CEO, right? So how or where did you pick up those skills?
I think I quickly realized it's very expensive to be a photographer. Like everything is so expensive. The lenses are so expensive. Everything is expensive. Like software is expensive. Like it's not it's not a hobby when you start investing in it as a profession. So I think I very quickly sort of, for me, I mean, when I started, I was like, oh, my macro lens cost $1,000. I have to make sure like I can pay this back. You know, it became a very motivated by what I needed and to be able to pay for it rather than, I mean, buy it without, you know, buy it because you can buy it. And so I think that was my first sort of motivation to think about it as a business, because once you start investing in those aspects of gear, it's unaffordable if you do it as a hobby, in my experience. But I mean, some people have the best gear and do it as a hobby. But I think that was a big sort of impetus for me to start doing this as a business. And I think it kind of motivated me to learn better, because, you know, when you have a small camera, which is like a crop sensor and not a full frame camera, and then when you invest in a bigger, a better piece of equipment, you want to make the best use out of it. So then I started sort of learning YouTube is a friend, you know, following YouTube, going to Instagram, looking at all the BTS and, you know, acquiring those skills and practicing it. And I think that was a big aspect of thinking of photography as a business for me.
So it was a lot of self-learning, right? A lot of time, like you were saying, searching for things on YouTube. When did you realize that you could make money doing this? Like, when did you go from the blog, like I'm running a blog and maybe doing a lot of research on like how to blog and how to get your recipes out there and how to get more views, and do I have ads on my blog and all the SEO keywording that goes into blogging, versus shooting for brands, restaurants, and then now commercial work that have moved into?
I think for me, it was pretty organic. Like, I got a job, they liked it, and then it grew into a bigger job. The next client grew bigger. And I think once I started tracking my progress as to how my work, like what spoke to people the most, like which aspect of my work appealed to people the most, I started focusing on that. Like, a lot of people say, what's your style? And I didn't know that photography had a style till I started doing it. And I realized that the people who were coming to me wanted that kind of work that I was creating. So being more mindful of what my style was, I think helped me create that niche in my business. And, you know, Austin has a great community of creators and they're all very nice. So, you know, being able to do test shoots was a big way for me to grow my portfolio with a lot of food stylists in Austin. And I think once I could show the breadth of work that I can do, it really grew my work into bigger brands and now commercial work.
Mm. So can you talk a little bit, thinking about the first food shoot that you booked, whether it was a restaurant or building a recipe, but you have a paying client, they're paying you to shoot food. Talk to us about what that assignment was and like where you were at that moment in your business. Like, did you feel really good about your portfolio? Were you still working on it? Just kind of that whole moment of time in getting that first job or those first couple jobs.
So my first paid client was a restaurant here in Austin, and I was still shooting natural light. I hadn't sort of started working with artificial light. And I know I was very nervous and I didn't know what to take with me. So I took the biggest diffuser, like the reflector I had. I took all sizes of them. I took like clips and everything. Like, I had so much gear. It was ridiculous. Like, I looked like a pack mule, like walking into that restaurant. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. And then I was so nervous that my camera would tip over. So I was like, you know, straddling on chairs, holding my camera on. It was just a nightmare. And I was just really nervous because I wanted to make a good impression. And I think once I left from that restaurant, I think I cried because I was like, oh my God, this is a lot of work. And it was not about the money for me. It was, I wanted to do a good job. And I had put so much pressure on myself for the end result to be good that I was like exhausted after that shoot. I was like, this is a lot of work. Like, I don't think I can do this anymore. But then I think once I edited these images and I gave it to the client and they really liked it, and the next time they had a bigger budget, the same friend told me that, you know, you could get an assistant. I was like, life-changing, like just mind blown. Like, oh my God.
You have help?
You mean somebody can actually help me? So that was, I think that kind of, you know, those things when you can actually have a crew to collaborate with means that you are able to make enough to be able to, you know, support your team. So I think that was a very gratifying experience for me, that I felt very good that I have a crew, like I can walk in and ask for these things. So I think that was my first paid shoot. And since then, I think I've been very mindful wherever I can to have that support, whether it's a stylist, assistant, a tech, depending on the project's needs.
That's so good. And how did you get that first restaurant shoot? How did you get it?
I was volunteering for this organization that works for fair pay for restaurants. And I was, during COVID, they were providing meals to all the hospitality worker families for free. So I had volunteered my time to take picture of that food during COVID so that, you know, they could put it on their website. And they have this fundraising event in Austin called Giving Tuesday. And they wanted images for that. So I just gone and like taken pictures of the food they were sending out to these families. And one of the restaurant owners was sort of part, you know, was sort of spearheading this effort. So he got in touch with me. And then that's how I got my first job.
That's awesome.
I'm curious then, how did you leverage that job for the next thing? Like, how did you then pursue to market your work? Which I think is a very hard skill for us to learn. And it's something that we're obviously constantly trying to, you know, get better at. But especially when you're nervous and you're kind of like, okay, so now what? I got that first client. How do I get the next one?
I think for me, like once they were happy, like I, you know, asked them if they liked the work. And I usually don't go back to a client saying, will you give me more work? I always ask for a referral. If they like my work, would they be willing to, you know, put a good word for me across? Or if I see that they have a common connection that I want to get an introduction with, I usually ask for that. And it's been really good that way to, you know, get referrals through people who've liked your work rather than say, hey, you like my work, will you give me a job again? So I think it kind of becomes easier for them. And restaurants don't have a lot of money. So, you know, they don't find it awkward when they think you're coming and talking to them because you want more work, but, you know, you're building a relationship with them. And I do a lot of like, I mean, I'm not saying I do a lot of it, but I do like doing community work. So whenever I get a chance, I volunteer my time to photograph for events. Like there was a dinner series called Pastas Paisanos, which was raising funds for abortion rights for women in Texas. So there were visiting chefs who were coming and cooking at this one restaurant. And I would go in and, you know, document this event once a month for them for 6 months. And that way I met a lot of people. I mean, never to like ask for work, but it was a good way to see what was going on in the hospitality industry. And it's like I was telling Shelley on a last call, it's always nice to have a face to a name. So when people see you show up, they show up for you. So I think it's kind of symbiotic that way.
Absolutely. And it just feels good to be able to do this thing that you love and like give with it. Cause it's like, at the end of the day, I do think that most of us love it enough that like, it'd be great if we could just do it for free, but like, oh, we got bills and the value is there and it's important, but it's nice to have those things where like we see a cause and we see how we can, like we can contribute with our gifts. And that's really cool. And yeah, it ends up being good networking too. That's nice. It's not about that, but it's not a bad plus. Did you know there is so much more to focus on women? We actually have a membership.
As a member, you have the opportunity to work with a mentor, highlight your work through our artist spotlight, partake in portfolio reviews, and best of all, keep the conversation going through our member-only Slack channel.
Hop on over to focusonwomen.org and sign up today to take advantage of all these benefits that will move you forward and support you on your journey.
Now, back to our show. You touched on one of the things that you touched on. Well, there's a couple of things I want to go back to and dig in a little bit more. One is the ask for referrals. I just really want to, for those that are listening, I think it's brilliant, right? It's a brilliant ask, and it's something that sometimes we just forget about, right? People know people, people have networks, people can easily refer you to the next person. I just did a shoot where I basically did it for trade. And one of the trades is like for referrals. But I really just wanted to hammer that in for anybody that missed that amazing nugget that was dropped.
Like an audio highlight.
Yeah, it's an audio highlight. The ask for referral, brilliant. But I wanted to go back to test shoots. Because I think coming up, I came up kind of similar in photography to you, in that I didn't even, like, know that when I'm just shooting for me, that was even called a test shoot. And that there's all these other people that like work on shoots, that when you start off like doing it for yourself, whether it's for a blog or like I came up through kids and family, like I was the stylist and I was the location scout. I did all of those things. when were you exposed to all these additional roles that you could start to pull in to make the job more refined or start to delegate some of those tasks? So you're not having to be the chef and the food stylist and the prop stylist and the lighting tech and the digi tech and so on and so forth down the line.
So I think, you know, when you start as an entrepreneur, you're kind of scattered. You're trying everything. Like you buy the most expensive backdrop, which is the worst decision to make. And then you don't know how to prop it up because you don't have a C-stand. And you're like, now what am I going to do with this? And you're putting things behind it. You know, like things you learn so terribly. And then you realize this is not what I'm supposed to do. And like, this is somebody who knows how to do these things. And I think I did my first portfolio review with Amy Cooper, who is also a Focus on Women member. And she had told me that there are gaps in my portfolio. And I didn't understand what that meant. She said certain food groups were missing and, you know, certain styles were missing. And I was like, oh, so how do you do that? Because she said, oh, you should collaborate. And when she said collaborate, I thought, do I collaborate with the product, the brand, the restaurant? Like, and so then I started looking up who else does things with food. And I realized there is this thing called food stylists and prop stylists, and you should have some props of your own, not just plates and bowls that you have in your kitchen, like something that is more mindful or scale, you know, things like that, which you don't really pay attention to. And so I did my first test shoot right before COVID, a month before COVID, with this amazing food stylist here in Austin called Christina Walter. I said, you know, I make a lot of Indian food. What can we do with it? She's like, oh, let's do an Indian snack spread. And I was like, really, we can do that? She's like, yeah, you just cook it and I'll bring everything that we need to make it look pretty. And I just saw how much work it goes to make a glass of orange juice pretty. And I was like, one of those moments when you're like,
yes. Bow down. Yes.
So I was like, I think that's when I realized that you can't do it all on your own. And it's not fun to do it on your own. It's so isolating that you come up with everything on your own. Of course, in COVID, we all, you know, bootstrapped it. We did the styling, we did the propping, we did all of that. But it's nice that there is someone else who sees what you're seeing and someone else who sees it very differently. So it's always a good gathering when you can bring in other creatives. So I think that's when I realized that I need people who are as creatively sort of driven as I am. So when I do test shoots, I do it for two reasons. One, if I want to have something in my portfolio that I don't have, so, and, you know, build on that piece, or two, I really want to collaborate with a creative that I'm really inspired by. So those are usually my two reasons for a test shoot.
So one of the things that you just touched on it there again, right, was when there's something missing in your portfolio, that like even Amy had said to you during that portfolio review that you had with her, have you been able to, like, I'm curious what was missing? What was the first kind of like one or two that came to mind where you're like, oh, I'm interested in doing that or putting that in my portfolio?
I had a lot of flat lays in my portfolio. I had no straight shots, you know, so I was like, oh yeah, but it's not that it just never occurred to me, because food looks so pretty when you look at it top down that I never thought you could shoot straight on. I mean, it was not something that came to me naturally. And so I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, and then the composition piece is very, like, the same principles apply to a flat lay that apply to when you shoot straight on, excuse me, but it changes the way you look at it. And I think that was a learning curve for me. And so having someone to work with on that, so I could focus on getting that sort of piece the way I wanted to look in my portfolio, kind of it was what kind of started me off on the test shoot journey.
What else have you learned by test shooting?
It's a lot of fun. You don't have this client sort of breathing down your neck. They're not like having like an aneurysm on set. They didn't get the right yellow or orange or green. Like, oh my God. And I think it's just fun that you walk in without a short list. You have a general vague idea that, you know, this is your theme, but you can play with light, you know, you can change things, you can choose to move something outside because the light is really nice outside. You know, there are no rules. And I like that. I like when there are no rules. I'm not a rule follower.
As we learned at the top of the hour, no 9 to 5.
Yes,
you don't want anyone telling you what to do.
I mean, it's nice to know. It's nice to be reined in, but I think the test shoot is when we can. I think everyone should do a test shoot at least once a quarter, if not more often.
Right. And so, what is that? Like, how do you determine the direction? If you think about maybe the last few test shoots you've done, was it, I have an idea for this, and then you share it with potential collaborators and they're excited about it and do it too? Or do you open up to other people's, like, I have an idea for this, and you're like, okay, cool, let's shoot it. Like, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you determine the direction or subject for your tests?
I love talking to people. So I love asking them if they want to have a cup of coffee or they're local. And, you know, we get talking and, you know, what we do always comes into the conversation. Sometimes it's like they are not feeling very inspired and they've sort of started doing something else. And I would say, okay, let's shoot that because I've not done that before. And why don't we play with that? And sometimes it's things like, I don't have any bread in my portfolio. And the stylist like, oh, I love baking bread. I said, let's do it. Like, you bake, I shoot, like, done. Like, so I think it's a lot of that. And sometimes also I want to experiment with a lighting style. Like when I started doing drinks photography, I was like, it's very different than food because the way you treat light, and I was a little new to artificial light. And so I was like, maybe if I do a test shoot on different kinds of drinks, you know, a translucent, a transparent, or, you know, splash, how does that work? And I think I collaborated with a stylist and said, you know, how do we do this? What is, you know, what glassware do we need to have? And, you know, it's always fun to go buy glassware because I love glassware. I have so much.
Yeah.
I think that's like a food photographer's like addiction.
Yeah, glassware. I mean, really, it's like one of the most wonderful things. It's wonderful to be a food photographer when you're the kind of person that sees like dishes, glassware, cutlery that you're just like, I wish I could have it all. Well, you know what you can have? A prop closet.
Lauren, it's so bad when you go to restaurants and I like what they have. Before they pour water into the glass, I turn it over. And I'm like, and if it doesn't have the brand, I will ask the server and make their life pretty miserable till they find out where they got that from. It's really bad. It's bad. It's
oh,
bad.
I love that. It's pretty adorable. I really, Shelly, can we talk about light? Because I'm really curious about, so you've mentioned this a couple of times about getting into artificial light. You didn't start there. You went there. And so what was that journey?
Why did I get into artificial light?
Yeah. All of it. Why? How?
What did you have any blocks about going from natural light to artificial light? Like, did you have preconceived things about it?
I had to learn something new. It was like, how much am I supposed to learn? Like, can I just not use what I know? So that was a big block. But then I think my first one was I was doing a big product shoot and I realized that consistency in lighting was extremely important. And believe it or not, there is, and I'm telling you this, I'm not gatekeeping. There is this YouTuber called Fig and Light. He has amazing artificial light tutorials. And I kid you not, a week before that shoot, I learned how to use the flash. And I said a prayer and I hope to God that shoot would come out nice. And literally, I do everything like this. Like, I was like, I say a prayer. I learn it before a week before that. And I was like, please, God, let this work out. I promise I'll do a better job next time. I don't. But, you know, it's just, I'm just saying.
I love that. I feel like that's actually, I think that has to be a fairly normal part of the process, right? Of like, it's a good thing, right? Like you have something you're going to shoot and you realize, oh, okay, there's this piece of it I need to either figure out or do a little better to do what I want to do, right? To solve the problem, to create what I want to create. And so you learn how to do it. I think that's kind of an awesome thing about what we do, that we can do that. We can, like, everything is figure outable. We can learn what we want to know and then we can go and do it.
Yes,
I think it's
I'm
awesome.
a lot of jump first. I can do this, and I was like, wait, how do you do this? I was like, let's go figure this out.
But I kind of like that though, right? You're not afraid to get outside the comfort circle, right? You're not, like you said, you know, you were joking a little bit where you were like, can't I just use what I already know? And do I have to learn something new? But I think there's some joy in that where it's like, I don't know how to do that, but why not? Like, I could figure it out. I could go onto YouTube, or I can ask friends, or I can call, you know, somebody, you know, now that your network has grown, you can call in on people. And say, like, I was thinking about doing it this way. Is there something I should, you know, think about more? Like, is there something in my blind spot I don't know about? I recently just did that with a shoot myself where I had an idea for how I thought I should light it. And then I was like, maybe I should ask my light tech friend if like, there's a better way. Right there. He pretty much said the same thing that I was thinking, which was great validation, right? It was great validation of like, okay, good. I wasn't so far off on what I was thinking.
I have realized being an entrepreneur, it is okay to ask, what is the worst that can happen? They'll say, no, we don't know, or no, we can't help you. Like, that's it, right? Like, but if you don't ask, you're like spinning and you're like, how do I do this? Where do I, it's just, and I just say it. It's not, maybe it's not a good thing, but I'm just going to ask. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Then I'll move on to the next thing. But I can't sit with the fact that I didn't ask. So now I don't know what to do. So I think it's really important to seek help, advice, counsel. And if you can find it, that's fantastic. And if you can't, there's YouTube. So.
Well, also what I love about your mentality in this of, I don't know how to do it, but I'm just going to figure it out, is that once you are willing to do that, go through that discomfort and go through the process of figuring it out, well, then you've just proved to yourself that you can figure things out that you don't know. And it's such a freeing thing to have that attitude going into any kind of job of, no matter what someone throws at you, it doesn't have to be, oh, I don't do that. It's, you know, I haven't done that yet, but we can figure it out, you know? And I think people really appreciate that. About, you know, just that sense of like, yeah, like, let's do it. Let's figure it out. I actually very specifically had a client call that out to me, and it was a revelation to me, and something I appreciated, like, oh, they actually, like, I never would have thought that they cared about that. But she said, you know, Lauren, I love that. Like, we will have the most random, weird idea. And you just think, and you just say, oh yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll do it. You know, like, she's like, you never say no. You always are like willing to figure it out. I think people really appreciate that. Collaborators, clients, like that possibility oriented mindset, I guess. I think it's a good thing that you did that. And what was that YouTube channel? Because I love to call out resources. You said it's Fig and Light, like Fig the Fruit. Fun. That's a good name.
I think he has a Patreon channel as well.
Nice. Okay. Like to call out those resources. Sorry, Shelley, you look like you're bursting with a question. I'm not going to stop. I love it.
I'm curious about this light journey, right? So you get this job, you're like, okay, I'm going to figure this thing out with Flash. I'm hoping you practiced, right? It sounds like you practiced before you got to the shoot.
2 days before I did. Yes, I did.
And then it turned out well.
It's
oh, fantastic.
Really really good.
And so you were kind of, you now are no longer a artificial light newbie, right? Like, you actually could do it. And did that open kind of this floodgate of ideas of, wait a second, I could do this with more things.
Yeah, it kind of also changed the way I looked at images, because, you know, Instagram is a blessing and a curse, right? So, and I'm like, oh, this, I could never do that. And then I was like, oh, wait, that's just the light coming from behind with something bouncing off on the other side. It's not rocket science. Like, somebody did that. Like, somebody set that up. It's not like they woke up one morning, the light was streaming in, and it was like, fantastic. Like, let's do this. No, it was not a let's do this moment. It was very planned, thought out. And so I think that kind of helped me see light artificially, and how I could sort of, you know, play with it and take it to a place where it looked more like my style. I don't know, still don't know what my style is, but look like my work, but not be so constrained by, you know, time and place.
The magic of artificial light.
I think you do have a, I mean, I feel like there is a very consistent style in your work. I mean, it's bright, it's punchy. I mean, like I do see it. I think that you gravitate to a very like a place that is like, it demonstrates you have a voice, or you have a specific way that you see things. So I see it when I look at your work and I love it. I think it's there. I'm curious. So now, since you got into artificial light, do you tend to prefer trying to start one way or the other? Like, do you like lean more toward artificial light now, or is it always just depends on the moment?
I think it depends a lot on the project. Like, if for editorial shoots, like, again, depending if it's an outdoor shoot, I try and do it natural because I can't, you know, set up light if it's like, it's a lot of work. But if I know the brief, and like the last piece that I did for an editorial piece, it was a portrait, and I knew I was going to shoot some interiors as well. So I took some light, and they had some really beautiful natural light, but because now I know how to sort of balance the two, I was able to, you know, enhance the look of the space and the person. So I think it really depends on the project. Like, when I do product, I definitely stick to like artificial light. I don't experiment with that at all. Drinks, bars are always dark, so artificial light. Yeah, I do a lot of artificial light. That sounds like it. Yeah.
Hey, it won you over.
But I have to tell you, I can't tell you the name of the assignment yet, but I had one a week ago where I had to rent a 400 millimeter lens.
Oh, really?
Really?
And for food?
No, it was not food.
Oh, okay.
I had ever done. Okay. I don't think I'll ever do it again. I told the person, I can't do this. She said, no, you can do it. I said, I'm telling you, I can't do it. Have you seen my size? I'm 5'2". I can't catch that lens. Like, it's physically going to be challenging for me. But she said, no, you can do it. And I swear, I mean, it was not a pleasant experience. I am so scared of looking at the images. I haven't taken them off the camera. That's how nervous I am, because I just put it on the tripod and I was like panning. I was like, I'm not moving. Nothing's going to go anywhere. Like, whatever has to come to me. Like, it was that thing is not moving. It was so heavy.
Oh, yeah.
So heavy. It was like a suitcase. I was carrying a suitcase with me. It was really bad, but
it gives you a whole new perspective on like the sports photographers that you see like on the side of the field, right? With the giant lenses.
And I think it's important to do projects like these, because then you know what you cannot absolutely, like, non-negotiably do. Like, this is some things I cannot ever do again, like, period.
Or things that you just really don't want to, like, you know what, I tried it and I'm good.
I'm good. I'm glad I did it. I'm never doing it again. So
right.
But going back to, that was all natural, as you can imagine. I was carrying a 400 millimeter lens. There was no artificial light. But editorials are natural. Commercial shoots or, you know, cookbook or restaurants, I try and do with artificial light, because it just keeps it consistent.
So let's talk about a recent project that you may have just completed that you did like doing, and that it was not arduous with a giant 400 millimeter lens.
Right.
I recently closed a deal for a cookbook shoot, so I'm really excited about it.
Ooh, like, congrats.
That's going to happen in a couple of months. So that was fun. The process was, oh my God.
Was that through an author or was that through a publisher?
That was an interesting process. I will speak about it at length once I'm done with it. But it was definitely a learning curve. And I feel like, you know, people don't talk about the pain points and we only see the glory on Instagram. So I think it's really important to acknowledge how hard it is to get any project, big or small, you know. So I think I'm very happy I had the project, but it was a lot of work to sort of close on the project. The most exciting one was the New York Times editorial piece that I did a couple of months ago that got published. It was my first time published in print, so I was super excited.
That's awesome.
So that was sort of a great project. And I did a test shoot last week that was bread. So we did all phases of sourdough and we ate a lot of sourdough and there was a lot of bread.
It's a very filling day.
It was very fulfilling.
Sounds like a delicious day.
It was, it definitely was a lot of bread, but it was really good. It was so good.
So was this like in studio? Was this with like a baker? Tell us a little bit more about it.
Stylist. It was at her home.
Okay.
She's into baking sourdough. She bakes sourdough every day. And so she always has sourdough starter and she was really sort of wanting to try these different kinds of sourdough. I was like, okay, what do we need to do? She's like, I don't know. She said, bring your light and camera. We'll just shoot sourdough as I make it. I was like, done. I was like, I took my camera and it was magic. She made the best grilled cheese sandwich with tomato soup for lunch. Life was good. So
not only did you do like finished sandwiches or finished bread loaves, but you also did like making of the process of it.
Yes. So, I mean, it's actually, some of them are already live on my website. So I put it in because it was just so much fun. Like, I mean, we all know how much work sourdough takes, but it is so many steps to get that perfect loaf. And I have a newfound sort of appreciation for sourdough.
Is this the gif of the girl smelling the bread?
No, that was for an editorial for Austin Monthly. It's the sandwich next to it.
Next to it. Okay. So for those that are looking at the site,
I
now
was
you know.
Thinking, because I remember that. I was like, oh, is it the gooey cheese bread? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the gooey cheese bread.
What a great shot. It makes me hungry.
That was lunch.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's the best when you can, you know, you get to shoot it and eat it.
See, I started doing food because as a parent, as you know, Lauren, you know, you're so tired of something talking back at you. Like, it was so nice to work with something that didn't talk back at you, and which is why I never started with people photography, because I didn't want anything talking back when I was working. Food never talks back at you.
It does not. But you have a lot of people in your work. I mean, you have a fair amount of people in your work, right? Like, you have people engaging with food. You have some lifestyle. So
as long as they're with food, they're happy people. So
there you go. That's true.
Try and keep them around food.
That's true. I'm wondering if we can, and you can say no if you're like, no, I shouldn't talk about it yet. But I kind of want to circle back to the cookbook project you just closed, because you talked about what a challenging process that was to just this point you're at right now. Could you share a little bit about, like, I guess this, a little bit about the process and what you found challenging? Because I feel like there's, you know, we can all learn from that. It's so good to learn from the challenging situations.
I think when we do commercial projects, we're so used to having a brief and a short list and, you know, style guides and already in place. So we are a little spoiled when it comes to that aspect of work. So in a cookbook, it's a little more organic, and all projects are collaborative. But I think when you work with someone who's writing a book and someone who's published many books and they have a vision and there are a lot of ideas that clash, and it's about finding that balance about what is possible and what is ideal. You know, it's two different places, so you have to find that happy middle. And so that's the process that, like I said, it was a learning curve, and now I'm like, any cookbook, I got this.
Nice. That's exciting. Okay. We are definitely going to circle back about the project as a whole once it's done and you're able to talk about it, because that sounds very exciting. And, you know, we're just three food photo nerds sitting here. So we especially would just have fun chatting through that. That's awesome. Well, I would love to know, I have a couple of things I love to hit on before we close out. And one of them is, I want to know, like, what keeps you inspired and, you know, keeps the creative juices flowing for you? Because, you know, as fun and exciting as this work is, it also is like, it's challenging to have to be creative on demand consistently, right? Like, it's not a hobby. It's you love it, but it's your job and it's the work you're doing. So can you talk a little bit about that, but how you stay sort of inspired?
I mean, take it as it may sound, but I think I just love it so much. Like, I mean, there are days I'm like, why am I doing this? But I wake up in the morning and I'm like, no, I just really, really like what I do. Like, and I've done many things, as you know, from in my sort of career path. And this is like, this really makes me happy. So I think for me, I just keep going back to it. So
that's okay. I just love it. All right. And then what do you feel like is a, you know, one or two pieces of advice that you would give to you starting out, like thinking back to when you're first starting to pick up a camera and figure this out, which, you know, I know it hasn't been like 2 decades or anything, but even like you've done a lot in that time. What's some advice you'd give to yourself?
Build community. I think community is very important. And don't be afraid of, you know, talking to other creatives, because when you start, there are a lot of things, right? Like, first, am I good enough? B, are they really going to be okay me asking them what they do? Because, you know, they might not want to tell you how they do things. But, you know, there are a lot of reasons why we don't ask for help or guidance. And I think I was in that space in the beginning of my photography career, but then I realized that I'm just going to show up and hopefully someone else will show up too. So I think showing up is extremely important, and usually it's reciprocated.
Absolutely. I love that. And what do you feel like is on the horizon for you? What are you really excited to, do you have like a specific sort of next level you're aiming toward? Or something you're like, I haven't done this yet, and I really want to get to do this kind of a project.
I think I've been lucky to do like all scales of project at this point, but I really want to work, and I don't know, again, it's maybe one of those 400 millimeter lens kind of situations, but I really want to work with food, but with a celebrity on set. I want to see what the hoo-ha is about, like, I really just want to see what that's all about. So that's my thing.
All right. Hey, listen, you got to put it out there to make it happen, right? So I love that. Oh, Nitya, will you tell us where people can follow along to keep up with your work and all the things you're doing and, you know, reach out to you and they have an awesome celebrity food shoot?
Yes, of course. My website is nityajn.com, nityajn.com. My Instagram is nitya.jn. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can DM me. I travel a lot. I'm happy to drop in a note. I was in New York last week with Tracy. I had so much fun at the Jubilee event. So I love reaching out. I'm coming to Atlanta in June. I'll come and see you, Laura.
When? Oh my goodness. When in June?
When?
I don't know. But I know I'm driving from Austin.
Oh my goodness.
On the way to North Carolina. So I will stop in Atlanta.
Kelly, are your dates flexible?
I have to leave on the 1st. I have a wedding in New Jersey on the 2nd.
Shelly's going to be here the end of May to June 1st.
And then I'm in New York from the June 3rd to the 5th. And then I'm in Chicago after that. Shelly's from the 5th to the 12th.
Oh, we'll have to come and see you in London.
Yep, that's okay. It. That's the solution.
I think we could all have some good food over here.
Oh, I absolutely. Like that solution, Nitya. We're coming to London. That's it. That's
just
it.
Come to London.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Nitya, please keep me posted on when you're coming to Atlanta, because
absolutely.
Yeah, we have to make plans.
Yes.
Amazing. Make sure you're following along with Nitya. Nitya, thank you so much. This was amazing. Thank you for sharing. Like, I feel like we just barely scratched the surface, but such good insight on your journey and where you're at and the awesome work you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. We would like to thank our team, edit and mix production by Sterling Coates, marketing and social media support from Laura Hillstrom and Jen Valina, and booking and production support by Maren Rossman and Tracy Tarek.
We would also like to shout out to our founders, Tracy Tarek and Mary Dell, and the rest of our Focus on Women board and volunteers. Find out more about our organization and how you can get involved at focusonwomen.org.